From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Girl with the Beckoning Eyes by Bernhardt J. Herwood. When the DeSimone family moved into the stately old house in the Bay Ridge section of Brooklyn in the early 1940s, they regarded themselves as very fortunate. The place was large, light, and cheerful. The street on which it stood was broad and lined with gracious homes and tall shade trees. Probably the happiest member of the family was Peter DeSimone. As the oldest son, he had a room of his own and was not forced to share space with his two younger brothers, which he had done for so many years. He was a freshman at Brooklyn College, and he was still under draft age, so that meant he had a good year or so to go before he was called into military service. With a room of his own, he could study undisturbed when he felt like it. When the family first moved in, it was early spring, and Peter had no need to do any studying. He got along quite well with his brothers and sisters and his parents, and he spent little time alone in his room except when it was time to go to bed. At first, he rarely shut the door and always left it open when he was out of the room. The DeSimones had been settled in the house for just about a month when the rest of the family noticed something strange about Peter. It wasn't anything big, but he began closing the door to his room and leaving it shut. At first, no one said anything to him. The DeSimones were people who believed in minding their own business, even among themselves, as long as no one else did anything to hurt anyone else. But then Peter's behavior became stranger still. Where he had been cheerful before, he began to grow moody and short-tempered. He snapped at everyone, and if the slightest thing displeased him, he would storm from wherever he happened to be at the time, go straight to his room, and slam the door shut behind him. There was another thing. He was no longer eating the way he had been in the past. His cheeks were noticeably more hollow, and there were deep, dark shadows under his eyes. Since he wouldn't tell anyone what was wrong, his mother finally put her foot down and made him go to the doctor. But there was nothing physically wrong with him. The doctor gave him a tonic to improve his appetite and assured Mrs. DeSimone that the only thing wrong with Peter was growing pains. He was passing from adolescence to adulthood, and he would soon snap out of it. But he did not. He grew more gaunt, more sensitive, and almost frighteningly depressed. He barely spoke to anyone at meals, and after eating only the barest essentials, he would retreat to his room, not only at night, but in the daytime as well. Worse yet, he now would not permit anyone to enter his room at all. What might have happened if the situation had continued like this is anyone's guess. What did happen is a matter of record. On the first cool night of autumn, the DeSimones finished their dinner as usual and spent the evening doing all the ordinary things they always did on an average weeknight. By 11 o'clock, they had all gone to bed. How it happened, no one knows for certain. But a gas leak in the cellar developed during the night, and the entire family was overcome by fumes. The smell was so strong that a passing policeman on the beat noticed it, went to investigate. When he realized what was happening, he summoned police and fire department emergency units. The DeSimones were taken out on stretchers and given oxygen, and they all revived except for Peter and his oldest sister. Neither of them showed any signs of life. Nevertheless, they were both rushed to the hospital and administered shots of adrenaline directly to the heart. And by what could only be considered a miracle, they both recovered. Within days, the DeSimones found another place to live, this time a large apartment in another section of Brooklyn. Once more, Peter had his own room, but unlike the house in Bay Ridge, in the apartment he behaved just as he always did in the past. He regained his appetite and went back to being his old self. When the family finally persuaded him to explain why he acted the way he did in the house, it was enough to make the blood run cold. There was no doubt about it. His room had been haunted. One evening, shortly after moving into the Bay Ridge house, Peter had gone to his room to look for something. While he was sitting at the desk going through the drawers, he heard a sound. Looking up, he was astonished to see a beautiful girl about his own age come out of the closet and smile at him. He rose up from his chair and was about to say something when she put her finger to her lips and nodded in the direction of the door. He understood at once. What would his family say if they saw him entertaining a strange girl in his bedroom? Winking in acknowledgement, he went over and closed the door. At the moment, he was of the opinion that she was a neighbor who had somehow found the secret means of entrance through the closet, and when he asked her about it, she only smiled cryptically and changed the subject. Well, he knew how girls were, and if she wanted to keep a little secret from him, that was all right. So they sat and talked well into the night. She refused to tell him her full name, saying only that she wanted him to call her Toddy. Another thing that impressed him was that she would not let him touch her, not even her fingertips. She said she had a phobia about being touched. And so began a strange and ultimately terrifying friendship. For though Peter thoroughly believed at first that Toddy was a flesh and blood girl, he soon came to realize that she was an apparition. But he fell in love with her anyway, and he could not bring himself to face the reality of it and confront her with a question that really burned so fiercely in his heart. Then, too, a gradual change came about in their relationship. It was as if she knew that he knew what she really was, even though it remained an unspoken truth that they shared. She became more demanding of his time, his presence. Although he longed to reach out to hold her in his arms, he somehow knew that if he did, she would disappear and never return. And then there was that pleading, beckoning look in her eyes. Finally, toward the end, the barriers began to break down. Though she still did not admit what she was, she began suggesting that he come with her. Then she came right out with it and begged him to come away with her. He had been dreaming about her, too, and he did not know whether she was reality in his dreams or whether during his sleeping bouts she was just a figment of his imagination. There was never a doubt in his mind that she was real, and these being with him in his room when he was awake. It began to dawn on Peter that his family had nothing more to offer him. School was a bore, and when he came to think of it, what did the future have to offer him? There was a war on. He would probably end up in the army soon and get killed on some foreign battlefield. If that happened, he might never see Toddy again. He couldn't bear the thought of losing her. Finally, he made up his mind. The next time she asked him, he would go. He could hardly wait, because he had reached his decision very suddenly one afternoon while doing some homework when everything seemed to be going wrong. That night after dinner, when Toddy came, he was ready. She seemed to sense this feeling because for the first time since he had known her, she held out her hands to him and murmured softly, "Come, Peter, take my hand and we'll go now." And he reached out and took her hand, and it was cool and soft. And as they started walking towards the closet, he suddenly felt a tightness in his chest. It became impossible to breathe, and he began gasping and choking. Toddie let go of his hand as he raised it to his throat, but she tried to grab his arm. "Hurry, Peter," she screamed, her eyes blazing, a look of anguish on her face. He tried to stagger toward her, but then everything went black. Strange as it seemed, when he woke up in the hospital, he had a fleeting mental picture of Toddie crying and disappearing into the closet, as she always did. But there was no great desire to see her. Although he didn't forget Toddie completely, he felt no sense of loss. Some months later, just out of curiosity, Peter de Simeon went back to his old neighborhood and began asking questions of some of the people he had known while he lived there. They were the kind of questions that most people either could not or would not answer. But there was one elderly man down the block who was anxious to talk. And when Peter asked him if there had been anything strange about the house he used to live in, the old man asked, "What kind of stranger are you talking about, son?" "You know," replied Peter, "weird, spooky kind of strange, that sort of thing." "I know," said the old man, lowering his voice and glancing around. "Most folks around here would tell you I was crazy to tell you a thing like this. But let me tell you, before you people lived in that house, no one ever stayed there for more than 2 months. You know why?" "Why?" "'Cause it was haunted, that's why." "What? You heard me. I said haunted." Here he lowered his voice even more. "You see, 10 years ago this family lived there. Name of Hoyson or Boyson. I don't remember exactly. Well, they had a daughter, pretty girl too, but she was a wild one. Got into some kind of trouble and hung herself in her bedroom closet one night. Well, they moved up pretty quick after that, but people who moved in after never stayed more than 2 months, like I already told you. You see, she kept coming back right out of that closet she hung herself in. I suppose she wanted company. Who knows? It might have been the other way around. Maybe she didn't like strangers sleeping in her bedroom." The old man checked himself, looked around again, and said to Peter, "Look, son, don't you go around telling anyone I told you about all this. They think I'm half crazy as it is." "Don't worry," Peter promised. "Besides," here he lowered his voice, "you see, I saw her too. And I just as soon you didn't tell anyone that either." Before he went home again, Peter de Simeon took one last walk past the old house, and he wondered if he would ever see Toddie again. Then he looked at his watch. It was late, and he didn't want to be late for dinner.